Liberal Venon Party leader and former Minister Laurie Hooper leads a somewhat lonely life as the only Liberal Venon member in Tynwald. Despite this, he feels passionately that party politics is the best way to ensure our politicians are held accountable for their actions. He joins me now in the studio to explain why.
So I'm the leader of the Liberal Venon Party, and we do have a chairman as well. That's currently Paul Weatherall, one of our commissioners up in the north. But no, my official role at the moment within the party is I am the party leader.
I suppose for people who don't, well, I don't know, even for people who do follow Manx politics closely, it's not entirely clear what the Liberal Venon Party actually is. What does it stand for? So this is your chance to explain that to us.
It's a challenge that I think that you have as a kind of centrist party is we're not extreme on either side of the political spectrum. So you don't tend to get kind of loud, shouty politics from parties like Liberal Venon. Our general underlying principle is we really think that we need to be pushing to help build and safeguard a fair, free and open society on the island. So we're what you would think of as a kind of a classic liberal position on democracy. We think that people's individual rights are important, that people shouldn't be held back from their being able to try and achieve their goals in life, to try and make something of themselves. But equally, we think the state should be there to support people who need that helping hand. And that's kind of where we sit on the spectrum. We're kind of in the middle. And it's hard sometimes to try and quantify that to people because, I mean, I talk to people about this every now and again, and quite often the response I get to some of the policy conversations that we have is, well, that's just common sense, isn't it? And you think, actually, yeah, a lot of it is. And it's because we don't tend to hold those quite extreme positions on either end of the political spectrum.
But actually, common sense does appear to be something that, well, I don't know, generally is lacking in the political conversations these days.
So I would agree with you on that. And I think, again, the reason for that, it's because a lot of political voices are amplified by things like social media. And so you get more visibility, you get more promotion if you do adopt quite extreme or aggressive positioning on things. And then obviously that any other voice gets drowned out. So there is a lot of common sense, I think, in Manx politics, but you don't tend to see a lot of that because that isn't what gets headlines, that isn't what attracts attention in kind of today's social media driven world. And I think that's part of the challenge that we have. Is if we're trying to provide a calm, steady, consistent voice on things that just makes sense, that does get drowned out then by some of the grandstanding that maybe goes on elsewhere. And I'll hold my hands up to that. I'm not great, I think, at promoting some of that middle of the road policy approach because I don't like the grandstanding, and it's not something that as a party we really have got into. You know, we'd rather have substantive conversations and get things done rather than make a big song and dance about things.
I imagine that the Chief Minister at least will be guffawing at that suggestion that you don't like grandstanding.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Alf and I have ever really got on, but I think sometimes you have to make a stand on things that matter to you, and I think that's kind of where we do come in as a party. And the only times I can think in recent years at least where we have stood up have been on really important matters of principle. And I think the fact that you can point to, we both know exactly the incident that we're talking about here, that's once in a 10-year political career that you can point to something like that where we've actually made a song and dance, made an absolute noise about something that was important. It isn't just, oh, he's off again, it's another week, because that isn't the approach that we try and take. And so we know what we're both talking about here without needing to talk about it, because it is an unusual thing that I had to do.
And for anyone who doesn't know, it's the resignation speech.
Yes, absolutely. And like I say, that was very out of character for me. It was not something I wanted to do. It's not something we as a party felt we wanted to do, but ultimately we didn't feel like we had any choices. And that's kind of what I mean about not trying to take extreme positions on things and trying to provide a steady, consistent approach to the way we tackle problems, the way we try and deliver for our constituents. It doesn't make a lot of noise. It often isn't headline grabbing. And actually, that's fine. I'm quite happy that I'm in here, I'm getting the job done, and I can explain to people the things that we're doing, the things we're achieving, the things we're delivering on, and ultimately the outcome is what matters, making things better for people, making things better for the island. That's what matters, not who gets the credit for doing it.
So Liberal Venon is a centrist party, I presume Liberal Venon acknowledges that there's a fair amount of dissatisfaction across the Isle of Man about the direction of travel. There's a general view that government isn't particularly good at delivering the promises that are, or at least the the vague suggestions that are made at election time. So how is Liberal Vannon going to change that?
So I think that's a really important question, and I think what you're hinting at there is the fundamental problem with our political system. So at election time, you get 24 people elected, and all of them have made vague, meaningless promises to the electorate. And the reason they do that is because they know when they get in, you need a majority of 13 to do anything. Actually, you probably need more than that to be safely secure in doing stuff. So everything that anybody promises at election time is then watered down and compromised with everyone else that's made promises that are ever so subtly different. And so by the time you get a policy position that has been agreed by the House of Keys, it can often be meaningless because it's been made by committee. It's had 24 different voices telling you what they think in order to get something through. So you get something that is often two steps forward, one step back. You get something that is, you know, mumbo jumbo. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It often doesn't really deliver on anything. And then, of course, delivering that is hard, because even if you've agreed on something that is waffly and meaningless, every member in that room might think it means something ever so slightly different. And so when the actual proposals come forward, that's when you have uproar. 20-mile-an-hour zones is a great example of this. There was been three or four debates on this where it's been made very clear as to what Tim Wall wants to do. The government produces a plan, and now you've got members standing up who supported those debates all the way through, saying, hold on a second, that's not what I voted for. But it actually is. That's exactly what you voted for. And that's the problem. Because you don't have a cohesive kind of party structure that can go out to the electorate and say, if I get a majority, I will build 1,000 houses. Because then when they get a majority, they've got no excuse for not building 1,000 houses, because they've got the public mandate and they've got the power to do it. Whereas the system we have at the minute, actually no politician can make that promise at an election, because they know, well, I'd like to build 1,000 houses, but maybe Mr. Callister only wants to build 500, and maybe Mr. Cannon only wants to build 250, and maybe Mrs. Kane wants to build 5,000. So actually the number you agree on is going to be totally different to what anyone thought at the outset at election time.
And then, of course, we get into the, well, should they be public sector housing? Should they be low-cost housing?
Absolutely. And then you end up with politicians coming in, and Mr. Thomas is excellent at this, wondering about, well, what do we define as affordable housing? What do we mean by what is a house? You know, those level of... And again, absolutely valid conversations to have. But it means you can't make definitive policy statements at election time that you then stick to, that you can be held to. You know, it's quite easy. If you've got a party in the UK and they've got a majority and they have promised not to raise income tax... We've seen that's what the Labour government has promised. That's quite a black and white promise to make. They have a majority, so if they now change their mind and do that, it's quite clear that's something they can be held accountable for at the next election. But when you don't have a majority, actually, you can promise what you like, because then when you go back to the electorate, all you've got to say is, well, I didn't want to do that, but I was outvoted. I was outvoted by the other people, by all those really bad people in Tynwald. I fought for you, I promise. And you see that now, and you'll see it with the living wage debate, for example, where a majority of Tynwald members voted to have a lower living wage on the Isle of Man. So we're not going to have a living wage now. We have a minimum wage that is not a living wage. And I guarantee you, those members that supported that decision to abandon the living wage will be going out to their constituents saying, well, I do support a living wage, actually, but it's other people that did that. I'm really disappointed in that outcome.
Well, you can do more than guarantee that, because yeah. That's what they said in the Tynwald debate. They disagreed with you that in their view, what was proposed actually was a living wage in their view.
Absolutely, and that's the problem you've got here. You can't hold people really accountable for their decisions, because there's always a way of saying, well, it was a compromise and I had to compromise to get it through and it really wasn't me. Whereas if you have a party structure where you've got people that can easily be held accountable, you can do that at election time. You can say, no, we had a Liberal Vannon government last time around. You made these promises and you did not deliver. So I'm not going to vote for a Liberal Vannon candidate the next time around. You can do that with a party structure. It's easier to have that sense of collective responsibility, I think, with a party. It's much harder to do that with individuals. It's much harder to do that with our current approach to politics. And in some ways, our current approach kind of works, because everything is a compromise, so you very rarely get big policy shifts, which gives us a bit of stability, but it does mean everything is very slow.
And that, of course, is fine when things are working well and we've got fantastic VAT deal, which is substantially more beneficial than perhaps it should be, and money is flowing in and nothing needs to change. But when you have the situation, the circumstances we've really been in for about 17 years now, where we are spending more money than we're earning, That's a problem.
It is, and actually a really good example of that is what happened during COVID. So during COVID, you still had government and opposition, you still had that element of compromise, but you had a government that was far more united about what it needed to do. And so they did have an effective majority. So when they said, I'm going to do something, they could do it. And they had the confidence to know that it was it would be supported by the large amount of the public. They knew they could do things. And they don't have that at the minute. And you didn't have that before, and you won't have that since. And it is because of that lack of a public mandate and that fear that every time they announce something, well, people aren't going to like this. And technically, we didn't ask them about this when we ran for election either, so it's really hard to argue that we have a public mandate to do this. And that's when it gets really difficult. And so everything gets delayed and watered down. And even the stuff that does happen, happens very, very slowly. And sometimes, like you say, that's absolutely fine. You don't want to rush constitutional change, for example. But some stuff needs to happen quickly because there are people being impacted today and they need help today. And actually, we find that very difficult to do on the Isle of Man. We find it very difficult to make even small changes to things quickly because everything has to be consulted on, everything has to be compromised with, everything has to be watered down, everything has to be explained. And you very rarely get the government standing up and saying, this is the right thing to do, and we're doing it. And Timwald, I'm not too worried if you are unhappy with it. We're going to do it. They very rarely do that. They normally stand up and say, oh, actually, yeah, I'm going to make big changes to this. And so inevitably, it doesn't happen. And quite often that happens even before it gets to Timwald. So those compromises, those changes, those withdrawals happen in the council of ministers, they happen in departments, and so you don't get big changes. And actually, the other thing it means is quite often controversial things never even make it to the public eye. So things that may actually be really good for the island but might be difficult, might be a little bit unpopular, you never get those even discussed publicly because there's too much of this, well, I don't know if I've got the support for it, I'll never get it through Timwald, the public won't support it. Whereas if you had a mandate from the electorate at election time saying, I know this is controversial, but I think it's the right thing to do, if the public has supported that and you've got a majority, you can go in with confidence knowing that's what we're trying to achieve. It's very hard to do that with a system of independent politicians. I say independent in inverted commas there.
And the circumstance that we're in, which is one of significant difficulty at the moment, I don't think anyone, even the proudest member of the Council of Ministers, would struggle to argue that everything is settled and we've got a clear course of action and nothing to see here, move along, please. I think everyone who's honest with themselves would agree that we still face some very challenging political times. Now, every time the Isle of Man has faced periods of political challenge, party politics seems to have succeeded to a certain extent. So the Labour Party was successful in the 30s, it was the 20s, 30s, sometime around. It was really very successful. It was successful again in the 70s when there were financial difficulties. Even McFannan had a brief spell in the 70s where it had become quite a successful party. So why is there only one member of Liberal Vannon in Timwald at the moment?
I think what we're seeing now is, and again it comes back to, I think, the amplification of individual voices. So what you're seeing now, and this is a real challenge with our political system again, is politicians can essentially promise whatever they like because they know full well that they're not going to be held properly accountable at the next election, especially if they are seen to be an opposition politicians. As long as they're asking a lot of questions and making a lot of noise, they're going to get support publicly. Whether they're achieving anything or not is almost a byproduct of that. And so because you don't have that cohesive kind of party structure already that says these are the guys in government and this is what they believe and these are the guys outside of government and that's what they believe, it's very easy, I think, to lean into kind of populist politics. And I think that's the risk that you run. So it comes back to, we're sitting here as a party trying to talk about sensible policy compromise, talking about sensible ways forward that might be difficult, actually, long-term stuff, and it's not going to fix things overnight. That's a difficult message for people to accept, especially when the other candidates are promising immediate quick fixes, and surely it's easy to just slash the size of the civil service or to stop immigration or whatever it may be. And that's kind of the challenge you're facing, is you're dealing, I think, now with a much more complicated kind of media infrastructure than maybe you would have been in the past, where everything would have been dealt with through newspapers or the Manx Radio or whatever it may be. What I would say, though, is it does look like we are starting to turn a corner. So we now have three commissioners following the last election, which is a 300% increase on our previous number of commissioners. So I think we are starting to see things shift a bit in that direction. I think what we might start seeing now as the next general election rolls around is more interest in standing. So we have a kind of rolling advert. If anyone ever wants to talk about standing as an MHK, pick up the phone, have a chat. And I've talked to quite a few people over the years about standing, and they kind of drop in and out of interest. But it only tends to be in the 12 months before an election that people really start coming out of the woodwork thinking about standing. I remember in 2021, we had people approach us like the week before the nomination deadline saying, I'd like to stand as a candidate. And I think my approach and my chairman's approach, I think, is that we'd rather have fewer but good quality candidates standing rather than just throwing 100 candidates at the wall and seeing what sticks. You know, I do talk about needing a majority in government to do things, but you've got to have the right people, I think. And I'd be very nervous if I was trying to lead a party full of people that couldn't agree on anything into Tynwald. I'd rather have a smaller group, because I know that even with three or four people that really passionately believe in things, you can get stuff done. Mm. And so you don't need 13 to make a difference.
And actually, if you go back to the 1990s, which was a time of significant change. You know, the Council of Ministers was introduced, mm. and there were lots of young, radical Manx politicians about, but there were three Labour Party members at that time who were a driving force, Eddie Lowy amongst them, and they were getting things changed. They were, and I suspect, your party... Party, what is he now? President Peter Caron?
Former party leader, yes.
Former party leader. Yeah. And former, of course, of the Liberal Vanham Party, Peter Caron would have been part of that. And they did get a lot done, even though they weren't in a majority.
And you can do that if you've got a committed group of people that really share those ideals and share a desired goal, because you already then have a block of people that can push things, that can convince, that can lobby, that can explain. And actually that really helps. It does, and it helps having people at different levels. So it helps having commissioners and MHKs working together on things as well, which again is much easier in a party structure. And we talk about party politics as if it's this kind of defined thing, but the reality is it isn't. You can have parties like the way the Americans do it, the way the British do it. It's very different kind of structures. And so what I advocate is a Manx party system, really. I don't like the kind of us and them approach you get in kind of US politics. I don't like the divisiveness that you get where if you're outside of government, you just attack them on everything. That doesn't seem helpful. If the government has a good idea, you should back it. That's the way it should work, whether they're your party or not, you know? That's kind of the approach that I think we try and take. And it's difficult. It's very easy to have a simplistic approach to party politics in any jurisdiction, and I think if we had a simplistic approach, we probably would get more support, because it would be easier to articulate and identify the things that we want that they don't want, and it starts putting you in that kind of us and them narrative. But I don't think that's healthy. I don't think that is where we want to be. And so I would rather take longer for us to get to where we need to be and kind of struggle through it a bit if it means we get a better outcome at the end. And I think that's the thing you've always got to have sight on, is whatever you're doing, is it going to make things better? And if you can't explain to people how it's going to make things better, you really need to have a good long think about why you're doing it in the first place.
And I suspect, certainly in the past, one of the reasons that party politics hasn't worked so well in the Island Band is very much about what you've just described. Manx people who have never been in a system which it has that kind of yabu, polarised approach to political discourse, have shied away from it. Of course, things have changed, certainly in the last decade or so. We have substantially more people living on the Isle of Man who are used to a party political system. But I suppose that still then brings us back to the point, why are they not voting in number for political party?
Partly it's because we're not putting enough candidates up, I think. That's one of the challenges. You can only vote for someone if you've got a candidate in your neck of the woods. And I think the other side of the coin is people are on the island are broadly, I would say, conservative with a small C. I don't think we've got an island full of blue voters, but generally speaking, I think we're quite a conservative nation. And that means instinctively you'd lean towards that kind of political perspective. And most of our independent candidates lean in that nature. There isn't an Alaman Conservative Party, for example. And I think that's because mostly your kind of legacy politicians, your independents, most of them would fall into that category. And so you are kind of dealing with a party system in that respect anyway. And so I think the votes are going where the people really are. The other thing I'd say is we do have that Yabu politics on the island. You do, just because you don't have a party. You definitely have MHKs who are quite happy to stand up and just make all sorts of absurd claims, you know, on the radio, perhaps, social media, whatever.
Yeah, perhaps it was the case that we didn't. Perhaps it was the case that we used to have a very collaborative and collegiate approach to running the government. Maybe, as your former party leader, Mr. Karen, would have said, it was too much of a cosy, clubby, matey approach.
Yeah, quite possibly. And I think the Speaker was talking about this quite recently, about the culture of Tim Alden being impacted by lots of new faces. And I think that has been part of the change. I think you have started to see much more of that kind of shouty politics going on. And I think it weakens the discourse, actually. It means you can't have a sensible conversation with someone, because actually all they're really interested in is grabbing the next headline and making some noise and being seen to be doing something. And sometimes that works, but if that's your kind of modus operandi, if that's your baseline way of operating, it does change the whole culture of the place. It changes the way you have to function. And so I think that's part of the challenge, is we're dealing with the impact of a party system without actually having a party structure sitting behind it. And that's a weakness of our system, I think, is you are better, I think, being open with the electorate about what you want to achieve when you're in government, provided you have the means to do it, and demonstrating you've got the means by saying, I've got 12 candidates. If you elect 12 of them, we'll get this stuff done. It's very hard to do that as an independent. And so you do end up, it becomes very much personality politics then, which isn't great, I think. It's very hard to get things done.
What were the commitments that Liberal van candidates gave at the last election then?
So I think we were quite clear in that we knew we were only running, I think we ran 3 candidates, and we were never going to have a majority. And so we deliberately set out to say, we are not going to promise you things, because we are at best going to have 3 of us. We are not going to run the government. We are not going to be able to make decisions. So we put together a statement of principles that said, these are the things we believe in. And actually, in some ways, that's helpful for an Isle of Man context, because what we're competing with, in essence, are those politicians that have different principles to us. And so setting out those principles about the kind of things we believe meant that when our candidates were writing their own manifestos, when they were talking to their constituents, they could talk about what that meant to them and how it would translate into the things that they wanted to try and achieve. And I think that's the only way we could really do things, because if we did run on a policy platform saying we are going to raise the living wage to £20 an hour, we have no way of making that happen, right? The decision, we could put a motion in Timald, but unless you get that compromise from everyone, it's not going to happen. And so being that specific with policy aims, I don't think would have been helpful at that point. Having reflected on that, though, over the last few years, I think where we are heading with the next election is probably to try and be a bit more specific. And I think we'll have to acknowledge that we're not going to be able to deliver on these things without Timald support, without the support of other members. But I think maybe articulating some very specific, even if it's only a handful of key, very critical policy aims, and say we're going to try and do X, I think that might help explain to people what it is we're about, probably a bit clearer than a set of policy principles. And those things will probably be around delivering more housing on the island. It will be around making sure we have a living wage. It will be around those kind of social policies that actually will help people and will deal with some of the challenges that we are facing, as opposed to kind of pie in the sky that you often get with political candidates making all sorts of promises about things which, you know, they could be 20, 30, 40 years off. Not really helpful.
And I had your minister, the housing minister, in earlier in the season, political season, and I said to her, well, I'm going to say to you, why should anyone believe that you're going to be able to deliver that any more than all the other people who've said that over the course of the last 4 years?
Yeah, and I think that is the real challenge, actually, is if you say, I'm going to build 1,000 houses, well, how? If you've got a majority, it's easy. You can do it. You've got a majority, you've got control of the government, you've got control of parliament, you can make stuff happen. When you're in a minority, it's much harder to do that. And I think in that case, the way that I would try and explain it to people is to say, well, look at the record of the people that you have standing. Look at what we have managed to do whilst being in post. And actually, whether you agree with the things that we did or not, you can't disagree that we did them, you know? Well, yeah. And that's the way I've always tried to explain it to my constituents, is I'm elected.
And you say that, but actually people often do disagree. Well, people love the reinforcement that they get from social media. People state their beliefs and whether their beliefs are based in fact or not, if enough people back them up, then they believe that that's the case. How do you overcome that?
I don't know if you can. Ultimately, I think it comes down to trust. You have to be trusted by people. So when you say something like, you know, I helped get 100 houses built, people have to be able to trust that you're telling them the truth. And I think part of the problem we have at the moment is when the government, it seems to be happening more and more, they put things out saying we've done something, there's always an element of spin in there. They never seem to be entirely honest and upfront about the things they've done or things they haven't done. And I think that weakens people's trust then in them. And then you have other politicians who jump on that and, you know, kind of make it a big deal. And that further weakens trust in our politicians and our institutions. And that isn't helpful. You know, and I've always tried to be honest with people about things. If we've done something that hasn't worked out, hold your hands up and say that didn't work out. You know, you have to be upfront about what you've tried to do. Some of it, though, is you can evidence these things. If you do end up in an exchange on social media, for example, you can often point to Tim Wald votes or policy papers that you've written or whatever it may be, that you can say that was a decision that I took. These were things that we tried to do, and here's some evidence. But ultimately, people are only going to believe what they want to believe, like you say. So it does come down, I think, to that ability to trust in people when they tell you the truth, when they tell you what's been going on. And so I've always tried not to spin things. You know, if something's bad, you hold your hands up and you say, hold your hands up, this shouldn't be happening in this way. We had a report very recently in the DOI about the Manxman grounding. I did a radio interview on that, and actually we're trying to say, hold your hands up here. You know, we're not trying to spin it in any way, shape or form. And I think that is a really positive way of dealing with things, because you have to be honest when things don't quite work or when things go wrong. And I think when you do that, when you then tell people the things that are going well, they're more inclined to believe you, because they don't feel that you're trying to twist absolutely everything to your advantage. You're absolutely honest about, we haven't achieved X, Y, Z. And housing is a really good example of that. We need to build more housing. We needed to, and we haven't. And that's just a statement of fact. I think when I asked Minister, I think it was Minister Crookall at the time, about how many public sector houses had been built, and the answer was zero. You know, and that's the reality. There's been lots of refurbishment, lots of upgrading, but actually in terms of expanding stock, this administration hasn't managed to do that yet.
And of course, upgrading the stock, making it fit for use in the 21st century, is it an important thing?
Oh, absolutely. Totally critical pieces of work there. I'm not doubting that for a second. But it also needed to come with that expansion, and that bit hasn't happened. And I think if you try and spin it, as the government is trying to do, to say, well, look at all these housing approvals, look at all this planning permission, look at all this, actually, everyone can see through that. Everyone knows what's going on in the housing market. Everyone knows how difficult it is. And I think when government tries to spin things that are so obviously spin, that's when people start losing trust in you. I think if the government was just more honest with people and said, this hasn't worked as well as we would like it to, we're not doing as much as we need to, then I think people would be more inclined to believe when the good news stories do come out. And that, it's a difficult balance. I get that, because you want to maintain confidence, you want to maintain trust, but equally, you need to be honest about the things you're doing. And I think that's a real challenge, not just for government, but for any politician. And again, it comes back to the slight difference between having independent politicians and parties. Independent politicians, when you go back to your electorate, it's always about what you have done. And so you need to be able to claim credit for all sorts of things. And so claiming credit becomes really important, because actually you can't point to something that another department has done, another minister has done, and say, I did that, because your name wasn't on it. So you end up, it end up becoming about what you as an individual politician have achieved, have done. But the reality is, you've probably been working together with your colleagues on all sorts of things to get stuff across the line. In a party structure, it's much easier to say, as a party, we delivered this. Okay, it might have been Mr. Gorn that did that piece of work. It might be Mr. Cannon that did that piece of work. But actually, it was all of us working together. And you can kind of share the credit and share the blame, ultimately, when things don't work.
And ultimately, as minister, you tend to inherit the credit for whatever your predecessor has done. Because by the time it takes, you know, the amount of time it generally takes to get things shifting, usually the minister has moved on before it comes to fruition.
Yeah, and again, that's always going to be the case, isn't it, with any kind of any system, especially when you have a slow trickle of policy change, that's inevitable to some extent. But the system we have, I think, forces you down that level of, we have to claim credit for stuff. I have to shout about how good I am at my job, otherwise I'm not going to get re-elected. And then getting re-elected becomes the focus of what you're trying to achieve, as opposed to, how do I do things better for people on the island? You start to worry more about, well, how is this going to look in September? And you can already see that change starting to happen now with more questions coming in and the kind of social media postings and the people writing letters off and publishing it. It's happening more and more now in the last 12 months of the administration. And I think it'll just keep getting worse as more and more politicians who maybe you haven't heard a lot from over the last 5 years suddenly start coming out of the woodwork and jumping up and down a little bit. And not just current MHKs, but there'll be others in other positions. You know, maybe they're commissioners, maybe they're people who are just interested in standing next time around. I think you'll start seeing more and more of that kind of self-promotion happening over the next 12 months. And I think the risk there is you lose sight on making things better for people because your focus is more on that promotion aspect.
Hmm. And I suppose it was ever thus in the final year of a House of Keys. You mentioned policy principles, and you actually were in a position as Minister for Health and Social Care to act on those policy principles. How did they influence your role? Was it just over three years you did as Health Minister?
21 to 24 would have been, yeah. It's a good question, I think. I like to think that I stuck to those principles. I think I like to think that I tried to make sure the systems we had were improving fairness for people, being more responsive to individual needs, less of a box-ticky approach to stuff. And I think in some ways that worked really well. So developing an autism strategy that was more about the focus on what the individual needed as opposed to saying, can we fit you into a box? And I think that helped, I think. Obviously, there was a lot of work during my time, and you'll know this yourself when you're a minister, half the job is your departmental work and half the job is the council minister side of things, where you're working with your colleagues to develop more government-wide policy. And I like to think that the principles I took into those conversations had a real impact on steering broader government policy. And I think you can see that because since I've left, the government have done things like abandoning the living wage that I think they would never have dared to try and do if I'd have still been sat in that room. And so I think you can see the effect of my absence really is probably the best evidence for saying, what did you try and achieve and how effective were you when you were in the room? I think that what you've seen happening over the last 6 months, nearly 12 months now since I resigned, I think you can see that those principles definitely had an impact on the way I did my job and the way that I input into those conversations. And to be fair, I'm not unique in that respect. I think everyone takes their principles with them into government, into ministerial roles, into council ministers. It's just the difference between me and other non-party candidates is my principles are written down in black and white for anyone to challenge me on. It's harder to do that with other candidates who haven't been as explicit about some of the things they believe in at their core. That's really the only difference. So I don't think I'm any different to other politicians in that respect. I have principles. They have principles. They bring them into every decision they make. But at least when the public vote for me or for a Liberal running candidate, they can look at that statement of principles and say, actually, are those the kind of things that I believe in as well? And if they are, Liberal running candidates are for you. And if they're not, and we're not for everybody, I'm not going to lie, there are other parties available, maybe go and explore other options. And I think that's the key thing for me. I would much rather have a smaller number of very principled candidates, principled MHKs and commissioners who are willing to stand up for what they believe in, as opposed to having more people who may be more flexible with some of their principles.
You've mentioned the change that you perceive in Isle of Man government since you've left. In a way, then, are you kind of abrogating your responsibility? Because while you are in council of ministers, and let's be honest, council of ministers has most of the power, substantially more power than Tynwald has. While you're in there, your principles are in there. As soon as you leave, your principles have gone from council of ministers.
Yeah, that is a huge challenge, and it is a big part of the decision, I think, if you decide to leave, like I did. And I think ultimately you have to weigh up whether you still think you're having an impact in the room, and you have to make that decision yourself as to whether or not am I going to have more impact in the room or outside of the room ultimately. And it's kind of coloured by the fact that when you're in the room, collective responsibility means you are required to support policies that you may not agree with. And I think it reached the point where there were policies that I knew that I could not in good conscience support. And I think that's the problem really with that system, is you wouldn't get that with a party structure, because in theory you've all signed up to your principles at the outset, and if your policies align with those principles, you should never find yourself in a position where you're saying, I cannot, absolutely cannot support that policy. The system you have at the minute, actually, you do get that position where ministers are being told, well, you've got two choices, you support the policy or you resign. And some choose to resign, some choose to say, well, okay, maybe I will support this.
But then you have a get-out-of-jail-free card, in as much as if you had clearly stated a principle or a policy that opposed or was opposed to what was being put forward, then you council of ministers rules and regulations allow you to stick to your principle.
In theory they do, but again that all comes down to the way they're applied in practice, and I think Mr. Thomas will give you song and verse about the way he felt like he stood by his principles. I think it was in relation to a planning matter when he was eventually removed from the council of ministers in the last administration, I think, over an issue which he felt he had a pre-stated position on, and clearly the Chief Minister at the time didn't agree with him. And that's the slight problem, is it's the Chief Minister's ultimate decision on whether you've broken the rules or not. Mm. And so if you've got a Chief Minister that is supportive of you, that is backing your approach, I think you're probably more likely to get away with it. I think if you have a Chief Minister who isn't supportive of you, who maybe is undermining some of the things you're trying to do, I think you're less likely to get that leniency, especially if he can see other people waiting in the wings to kind of bring in who might be more supportive of his particular policy position and his particular approach to things. Again, that's just politics. That's the way it is. And I think that's something people often don't quite realise about Tynwald. We have lots of rules, we have lots of standards and things we're supposed to do, but ultimately it is a self-regulating, self-reinforcing system. And it all comes down to actually what you believe as an individual and who those individuals are, and a lot of it is down to relationships. So it's not like a contractual dispute or a legal dispute where you can say, look, the rules say this, because in the world of politics, the Chief Minister is well within his rights to say, I know the rules say that, but I'm allowed to fire you, so you're fired. Mm. He doesn't really need to give a reason. You know, that's the nature of politics, ultimately. And so it isn't quite as clear cut as you've got a pre-stated position, therefore you're protected. It's never quite that simple.
Should you be your behaviour, your conduct as a political member, should that be assessed by your peers, or should there be some independent mechanism for doing that?
That's a tricky one, because ultimately I think Parliament shouldn't be answerable to anybody other than the people that have elected the members of Parliament, and so Parliament in some ways has to regulate itself. The slight problem you've got, of course, is when those individual members of Parliament are perhaps not as interested in dealing with conduct matters. And that's definitely the feeling I'm getting at the moment. I mean, we had two big conduct debates in this administration, and the context and the content of the first debate was quite worrying. People standing up saying, I can't support this recommendation because, clearly the individual's very upset. All right, okay, that's strange. You've got an independent report recommending a particular sanction, and you won't support that independent report because you happen to like the individual who's the subject of it. And the second one, the Chief Minister actually, Tynwald, voted not to sanction him for what the Standards Committee viewed were clear-cut breaches of the rules. And so you do end up in a situation then where kind of personal loyalty almost outweighs this idea that there should be a minimum standard. And I think the Speaker has talked about this at length, where up until recently, you couldn't accuse another member of making a false statement in Tynwald. That would have been considered to be a bit below the belt. Now, fair game, actually. And actually, we are slowly changing that and lowering the bar of that debate. And so I'm becoming more and more of the view that maybe we should have independent standards, an independent commissioner or an independent standards board or something that isn't subject to Tynwald. And I appreciate that might be infringing on the rights of Parliament, the sovereign rights of Tynwald. But if members are unable to regulate themselves, then actually maybe we need to find a different way of doing things.
Indeed. And that there is no doubt that during this particular term, this particular term of House of Keys, there's no doubt. It certainly appears to me, at least, that it is more fractious than perhaps it has been, certainly in the various iterations of House of Keys that I've been involved in or have witnessed.
Yeah, I definitely. This one feels more fractious than the last House. And I think it's fair to say that I had a lot of disagreements with Howard Quayle and his government over the last 5 years, but at least it felt consistent. I think it's been much more fractious, much more toxic, I think, this time around than previously. And some things have happened that I was very surprised at. So in the no confidence votes for Mr. Cannon, some of his ministers basically standing up and saying, well, I won't work with any other minister. If he goes, I go. And you think, well, hold on a second. We've been elected to do the best job for the people of the island, and you're basically saying that there is no circumstance in which you would work for another chief minister. That's bizarre. So what if Mr. Cannon is hit by a bus or somebody decides to resign? Are you not going to work with another chief minister then? It felt very strange. I don't think anybody would have done that in the last administration. They would have stood up and supported the chief minister because they supported his policies, his approach. But I don't think any of them would have stood up and said, I'm definitely not working with somebody else. It's a very, very strange situation, I think, we're in at the minute. And I think coming back to that standards question, I mean, I've been preparing for a while a number of conduct motions for saying, actually, I know that you've told Timwell things that aren't the whole truth. I think you may have misled Timwell. I think you've made statements that are provably false. But I haven't tabled them, and I probably won't, because they're not going to get any support. I don't want to go through all of that pain, all of that work, which is going to distract me from things that are actually going to be helping people. Because, you know, I think people should be honest when they're in Timwell. I think they should tell people the truth. I don't think they should make misleading statements. But ultimately, what's the point? You know, I know Timwell's not going to support my motions. I know that members are just going to be allowed to say whatever they like with no consequence. And, you know, am I better off just waiting till the next election when I'm pretty confident the electorate will say, thanks, we've had enough of you, we don't really want you again? I don't know, is the answer. And I don't think I'd have felt like that in the last House. I think as much as I disagreed with the government and disagreed with some members in the last House, I don't think we would have fundamentally disagreed on some points around conduct and principles like that. Whereas now, I don't feel as confident saying that, if that makes any sense.
And of course, none of this helps in terms of halting the decline of in trust and belief that Isle of Man government and indeed Timwell collectively is going to solve the weighty problems of the day.
Yeah, and I think again that comes back to this lack of a party structure. It's very hard to hold a government accountable. You hold individuals accountable. You can blame a particular minister for a problem, but most people on the island don't vote for that minister. And so if I, for example, say I don't like infrastructure minister, we've already mentioned, you know, Dr. Hayward already, so say you don't like the infrastructure minister, that's fine. But if you live in Rushen, you can cast a vote about that. But you can't if you live in Ramsey. So you might think, actually, I hate the government. I absolutely hate everything they've done. But actually, my local MHK, Mr. Ashford, is fantastic, and so therefore I'm going to vote for him. But he's a part of the government. Whereas you wouldn't have that in a party system, because you'd look at your local MHK and say, he's a member of the same party as that guy. These are the things they all supported. They should all go. And you can have some level of impact, whereas you can't have that as independents. And I think that's a real big part of the problem. And so that means, again, I'm coming back to this idea that it's hard to get things done. Of course it's hard to get things done. Are you really going to get politicians making controversial decisions or difficult decisions when the blame is going to be laid squarely at their door? I don't think so. And that's why I think you do get very slow change. I think we are seeing, I mean, how many years now has the government been promising they're going to eliminate the deficit? I think in the last administration it was going to be done within 5 years, and this administration it's going to be done in 5 years, and I bet in the next administration it'll be done in 5 years. But actually it's never going to be eliminated, because it'll take so long for government to nicey-nicey its way through some of the changes that are needed, rather than being able to stand up quite firmly and saying, we need to do some stuff, we're doing it, because it's the only way we're going to survive. And I just don't think we're capable. And I don't mean the people, I just mean the system. I don't think the system is capable of enabling people to make those difficult choices. It's just the way the system is. And if you like slow decision-making, and you like everything being decided by a committee, and you like the fact that it takes absolutely forever to get anything done, carry on by all means supporting your independent political system. But if you want things to happen quickly, you do need some kind of collective responsibility and collective accountability, and the only way you're going to get that in a parliamentary democracy is through a party structure.
Party politics, though, hasn't been what you would describe as wholehearted success in most parts of the world that have it at the moment.
No, and again, I'm not saying it's the perfect solution. All I'm saying is party political systems tend to produce quicker decisions and quicker outcomes, because that's the nature of the beast. It lets you take more risk. It's the same principle as incorporating a company. You can take more risks, so you're more likely to make more risks, which means you're more likely to take decisions, so you're going to get outcomes. Now, whether those decisions were right or not, that's beside the point. That isn't the point of the argument here. You were forced to make a decision. You were forced to take a risk to do something. And a party system enables that to happen. With individuals, it's much harder to justify taking a risk, because I might be comfortable taking a risk, and this has definitely happened when I was in post. I was more than happy to take a risk and try and do controversial things that might have been difficult, but ultimately I think would have been supported by the public and all the right things to do. But I couldn't convince my colleagues in the Council of Ministers to take that risk, to do those things. And that's a problem. Because then, what happens? Well, nothing. And all the public see on the outside is nothing is happening. Whereas you know on the inside, you are working your backside off to try and convince your colleagues that we need to take these risks, we need to make decisions, we need to do things. And yes, ultimately, we might get voted out at the end of it. But if I'm going to be voted out of my seat, it's going to be because I have done things, not because I've sat on my hands and done nothing. And I think that mindset is much easier when you know you've got a party behind you, when you're all collectively in the same boat, whereas at the minute, you're not collectively in the same boat. And so, like I say, I agree with you, Phil. The party structure is not the only solution. It is not necessarily a perfect answer to our problems. But it will at least make sure that decisions are made and politicians are accountable to the electorate at large. And that's really the only argument that you can put in favour of it. You want decisions and you want to be accountable. You kind of need a party structure. If you aren't too worried about decisions being made, if you're not worried about things being kicked into the long grass forever, and you're not too worried about being able to hold government as a whole accountable for their decisions, then carry on with the independent system that you've got. And that's the only thing you could see by looking at other jurisdictions like the UK or even the US. When you control the various branches of government and you've got a party, you can do, you know, you can make decisions, you can do things. The other side might not like it, but at least you're doing the things that you've promised your voters you're trying to do.
Well, we're almost at the end of the programme. What would a success look like for the Liberal Vannon Party in the 2026 general election?
So I think if we can increase the number of MHKs that we have, that would be good, I think. I think that's really what I would define as a measure of success. I don't know how many candidates we're going to run this time round. You know, we'll probably be a handful again like we did last time. But if we can increase the number of candidates, that'll be good. And if we can increase the number of votes that we get across the island again, that'll be positive, because I think that will stand us in good stead then for the next local authority elections. And again, trying to recruit some more commissioners, trying to get some more councillors on board to boost our numbers that way. But generally, I think success for any political party has to be, can I get more people elected than I got the last time around? Ultimately, that's the only way you're going to see validation of your policies, validation of your principles, is if the people actually, when they go to the ballot box, say, yes, we fundamentally support the things you're trying to do. So the ballot box is the ultimate test, really, for any political party.
And in terms of those policies, what do you think are going to be the core policies that you'll be putting forward?
Well, like I said, I think we'll definitely be still pushing for a living wage on the island, seeing as that's now been abandoned. We will definitely be pushing for some house building, affordable housing specifically, because we haven't seen enough of that developed, I think, over recent years. We'll probably be looking to maintain and support the NHS in its current form, so not restricting access via eligibility criteria or charging mechanisms. There is a list that probably as long as your arm of things that I'd like to achieve, but as a party I think we'll probably try and stick to a number of very core principles to make sure that actually can we deliver on those things. That's what really matters. If I'm going to go out to the electorate with my colleagues, with party colleagues, and say these are the things we're going to try and do, we're going to make sure they are actually deliverable objectives rather than just pie in the sky.
And how are we going to actually get enough money to make all this happen?
The question around funding is not as complex as people make it out to be. It really isn't. The challenge you have here on the island is you have this sort of ideological belief that our current tax system is the only way to do things, in this kind of user pays approach is the only solution. And the reality is that's just not true. There's lots of economic theory and tax policy and tax theory that sits behind alternative structures and alternative approaches to things. But in essence, you could sum it up as, rather than having one big tax on one particular thing, if you tax everything a little bit, you're probably going to raise more income, in essence. And actually, there's no reason we shouldn't be exploring some of these things. I mean, I've written to the Treasury asking them about progressive tax measures, about changing the income tax system, about changing the way we deal with things like corporate distributions. There's lots of opportunity out there in terms of government if they were serious about raising additional revenue in a constructive way. So not just taxing people more for the sake of it, but actually trying to tax sort of behaviours and activity on the island in terms of supporting our local economy and supporting people that actually live and work here. But the flip side of it, of course, isn't just about raising money. It's about making sure what we're spending is being spent on the right things. And I think everyone can look at things government is doing and saying, actually, why are we paying someone to do that? And inevitably, the answer is because it's in so-and-so's constituency and they've been fighting for it. Well, actually, that isn't necessarily a good reason to do something. And I think that's part of the conversation that we're lacking around efficiency and delivery. Isn't just about, oh, we need to slash budgets and stop spending. Actually, it's looking at what we're spending and saying, is that giving us good value for money? And sometimes the answer is yes, and it's difficult because it's expensive, but it's worth doing. Sometimes the answer is, I have no idea why we're doing that. Can we just stop doing it, please? But I don't think government is there yet. I think the challenge on that side of it is there's no low-hanging fruit left. It's been dealt with, all the easy stuff. And now you're into needing to make difficult decisions around services, around delivery, around what government does and how big government is and all the rest of it. But those decisions are going to be difficult. They're going to be controversial in some cases. And I keep coming back to, I don't believe our system of independent politicians is capable of making those difficult choices. I think it always comes down to, you can't cut that because it's in my constituency. You can't cut that because I'm friends with so-and-so who really supports it. And I think that's a real challenge. Whereas if you had a party structure, you'd have the confidence, I think, that you have colleagues behind you who are going to support some of those slightly difficult decisions in some cases, and you will start seeing changes. And so the government can talk a big talk around efficiency programs and around delivering better value, but I think ultimately when it boils down to it, you aren't going to see a lot of change with the system as it currently is, not unless you get some real brave moves, I think, by the government. And I just don't think, especially in an election year, you're going to see that.
That was Liberal Venon Party leader and Ramsey MHK Laurie Hooper. So what do you think? Should we give party politics a try? I'm Phil Gawne. Goedemorgen en geestachrom. Thanks for listening.